Welcome to Peace, Health, and Joy with Diana Wallace, a designated space in your life to receive encouragement, equipping, empowerment, and hopefully even entertainment. You guessed it, with that alliterative intro for ease, I'm a former pastor's wife and homeschool mom. But also, I've been a holistic wellness coach specializing in mysterious, hopeless situations by actively partnering with the Holy Spirit in my work since 2006. If you're looking for a unique approach to integrating wellness of spirit, soul, and body from a Christian perspective, you are in the right place. My southern accent shares my Arkansas roots, but these days my home is in Alaska. I'm tickled pink for you to join me today. Let's get started. Well, welcome back to the Peace, Health, and Joy podcast. I'm your host, Diana Wallace. And today is just a particularly exciting day because today is the first time on this podcast that I have ever had a guest. And I cannot think of a more perfect situation, a more perfect woman to have on here with me as my first guest, because Melissa and I go back a few years and we have a few things in common. So I'll take just a moment to introduce you to Melissa, and then we are going to invite her to share a powerful, powerful story. So Melissa Swain is my friend, and we have really been friends for a few years, and she is a mom of two. She is an author. She is a cool homeschool mom. I obviously don't have my notes in front of me, but they're nearby and they know the things. But Melissa really has a beautiful heart for ministry. And she and her husband, Chris, ministered together for almost 23 years or about 23 years before he left this world to be with the Lord unexpectedly in 2021. And so Melissa and I share a membership in a club that no one wants to be in, the Widow Club. And so today, Melissa is here to share with us her powerful story, and also to share a resource at the end. We'll make sure that the link to that is in the show notes below. And so, Melissa, just thank you. Thank you for being here with me today. We agreed before we came on, we weren't going to have a pre-conversation. So we haven't, except we've had this conversation a many few times. And So thank you for being with us. And will you share your story?
Yes. Thank you for having me and for letting me be your first guest. Yay, that's a super special privilege. So I'm grateful for that. Thank you. Chris and I met at a church function. He was called to ministry at that time already. And we married in 1998. So I will say that I was a baby then. Maybe not, but maybe, because I don't want you to know how old I am now.
Well, I'm older, so don't feel bad. No matter how old you are, you can always have confidence that I'm going to be older.
We traveled around different churches, as you do when you're in ministry. We served in several different states and locations and in different areas of ministry. We started out in student ministry and we were there for over 10 years. And then we moved to college and singles and then groups and discipleship. And Chris had finally found his sweet spot in discipleship, because that's really what his heart had longed for all those years. And he didn't really have a name for it or a place for it. But in his last ministry position, that was what he was doing, was discipleship. And he was so excited about it, loved it, was growing a ministry and an organization. And like, it was just, it was great. It was his favorite thing ever. He was my favorite person ever. We still liked each other even after all of that moving and ministry and kids and all of the things. And in July of 2021, he was working on a manuscript. The Lord had really put on his heart that he couldn't find the resource that he wanted to disciple our kids for how to do that, because he didn't grow up in a Christian home and didn't know how to do those things. And so he hadn't been able to find the right kind of resource to help him, to help me, to help us do that. And so he was writing a book. And the kids and I went to Arkansas to visit my family. And I got a call, actually my doorbell, video doorbell. A neighbor hit it and was like, "Hey, you should probably know what's going on in your front yard." And it was Chris. He had collapsed at the mailbox. He had taken his brand new puppy that he had wanted his whole life, his English bulldog puppy, took him out to get the mail and had collapsed. He did not ever regain consciousness. We don't know what the cause was, and we'll never know the side of heaven, because the doctors could tell us all of the things about what it wasn't, but could never give us an answer for what it was, what the cause was. So we spent, we scrambled to get home. We had some wonderful people who put us on a plane and had us home by midnight, which was a miracle. And we spent the next 6 days in the hospital before he finally went to heaven. I mean, I that whole time was crazy and wild and ridiculous and terrible and awful in so many ways, but that's our story. I mean, the kids and I, at the time, my kids were almost 14 and had just turned 10. Now they are 16 and almost 13. And we've done okay. I mean, it's hard, it's awful, it's terrible, but we're okay. And only by the grace of God can I say that.
We're okay. We're okay. We're fine, right?
Yeah.
Until sometimes you're not, and most of the time you are. And so, wow, Melissa, there's just so much to unpack there. You know, just... you guys serving together in ministry. People think, well, when you come into ministry, like, you just know what you're going to do. You know what you're going to serve, you know how you're going to serve or whatever. And I really haven't found that to be the case in most people I know who are in ministry. It's a journey.
Oh, and absolutely.
Maybe even what rang your bell when you first began stops ringing your bell because God has a new bell for you to, you know, go along with. So Chris had just gotten into, like, he had found his sweet spot in discipleship. And then God had planted in him a desire to write a book, the book that he needed that hadn't been written yet. He had started that. So tell us about what happened with that project. Here you are. You've just very shockingly lost your husband, who was like this close to publishing a book. What happened there?
My background was in editing and writing. And so it was probably shocking to his literary agent. But the day after Chris passed away, I had just had one of those moments like, oh, I need to talk to him. And so I emailed him and said, "Hey, I don't know what needs to happen or who you need to talk to, but we're going to finish this book and I'm going to do it. So let's figure that out." And he said, "Okay, let's have a meeting in a couple weeks." And I was like, that's great, but I'm just letting you know this is happening. And the publisher was fantastic. It's a Christian publishing house, and they were wonderful. And once they understood that I was actually qualified to step in and finish the book, they were like, "Okay, great." And so they very graciously allowed me to do that because they didn't have to. And I finished it, and we published it, and it is on bookshelves and at Amazon and all the places. And they put both of our names on it as an honor to both of us. And I don't know, it's one of those things that I never thought I was going to be doing, but here I am. Just add that to the list of things that I never thought I was going to do.
Oh my goodness, posthumous completion of a book. Oh my gosh. So for those who are listening to this on an audio podcast platform, the book is called Write It On Their Hearts. Yes. And by both Chris and Melissa Swain. And it is just, it's just a beautiful extension of Chris's legacy work here that will continue for a long, long time, for a long, long, long time. So yeah. Melissa, kind of dovetailing off of that, a legacy work that he started, that you finished, that you birthed, that you delivered. What are some other ways that you see Chris's legacy in your world? And while you're there, I'm just going to mention, when my husband Tim passed away 6 years ago this month, at the time of this recording, one of the things that most surprised me was the way that his legacy did not go. Like I'd ever actually thought, I wonder if his legacy is going to go. I didn't think like that. But one of the things that just struck me was immediately how things that he has sown into our lives are still here. His humor, our family culture of humor, different things of that nature. But I legacy is like, it's on my mind these days. Mm-hmm. It's what stays here when we're not here anymore. So how have you seen Chris's legacy continue since that time?
I see him in my kids every day. And sometimes it's really hard that I see him in my kids. Like, I'm so very glad that I do. But sometimes they don't know that that is their dad. Not too long ago, my son was telling me about how he was completing his English assignments and how he was writing them and how he was doing them. And he has no idea that before he was born, his dad was in school and I was helping him like check all the boxes to finish all the degrees and like do all the things. And he was telling me his process for writing his English papers. And I was like, that's your dad right there. Your dad did that the exact same way. And he has no clue that was his dad's process, but it was exactly the same. So there are things in them that they don't even know are there until I go, well, there's your daddy. And sometimes it's really sweet. And then sometimes it just catches you and takes your breath away. I also see Chris in the people that we have known for years and years and the people that he just met. I cannot tell you how many people came up to me or have messaged me or emailed me or whatever and said, hey, I don't know you, you don't know me, but, and then proceeded to tell me how Chris had impacted their life. And so I see that in ripples as different things happen. And I never get tired of it.
I love that. It's like little, in a way, it can feel like little snuggles from God, like little huggle snuggles that are just like, he's still, you know, he's still with us. Chris is still with you. And he deposited such richness into the people that he loved that it remains and it will remain for our lives. And I love that. And I love that your children are getting to even know their dad like in new and different ways on the other side of his absence. And that is trippy, but really kind of cool too. Yes. Oh my goodness. So you were married, however you want to, not the weirdest thing, married, but the person is not here anymore, but you didn't like sign off on anything that says, I'm not going to be married anymore.
Right. I didn't agree to that.
But you, I did not want that. I would like to backspace just like 8 spots, please. But so you guys were involved in a ministry in a church, and then he's gone. What did that look like for you? You and I have talked about this. We've had some pretty candid conversations that when our person is not here anymore, we do not know what to do with ourselves. Mm-hmm. We do not know what we need. And most certainly, no one else really knows what to do with us either. And sadly, that can even include our church as well. And I know that our churches, like our church families, they love their pastors. They love their pastor's family. And this was a tricky one for us to navigate. And you and I have had some conversations. So how did that go for you? Going back into the church where you guys had ministered together, and yet this time he wasn't there.
It's so hard. I found a statistic that said 50% of widows leave their church. And I get it. Like before, I don't think I would have read that statistic and thought, oh yeah, I understand that. But now I do. And I am shocked that it's just 50%, honestly.
I agree.
For the first probably 3 to 4 months, I couldn't go on Sunday mornings. I couldn't. My kids went. We had wonderful friends who would pick my kids up and take them every Sunday and bring them home and even take them to lunch afterward and just spend time with them and love on them. And that was wonderful. And I would watch online because I could not bring myself to be there on a Sunday morning. I could go during the week. We had other things, you know, Wednesday nights. We had other things there during the week. And, you know, being in the building was okay for me. I could go on a Thursday and drop my kids off for their activities. But being there on a Sunday morning with all the people and with the people who know me because they know him, and I couldn't do it for a long time. And we're now over two and a half years later, I'm still very cautious. Not because people aren't kind, but because sometimes it's just really, really hard to be there. I have friends who we sit with every Sunday. Our church has multiple services because we're a large church. And so we always went to the 8 o'clock service with Chris. And I don't go to the 8 o'clock service. I go to a different service. And I sit with my friends wherever they're sitting. And if they're out of town, I find some other friends to sit with. Like I feel kind of like I'm having a babysitter. I feel like my friends are like, ugh, again. They're not. But I feel that way, that they might feel that way because, you know, I'm the girl who doesn't have her person. And it's really hard.
It is hard. It's so surprising having ministered together with your husband. Like, so I did not grow up in church like Chris. I did not grow up in church. So my church experience was completely related to Tim Wallace. And so we started going to church, and he did grow up in church, but we started going to church together about a year after we got married. And he was not called to ministry when we got together. And then he felt a calling later. And then we began ministering together and all this. And he was the pastor. And when he was not there anymore, it just felt unbearable. And I honor what you just said. I could not even go to church for 3 or 4 months. It's hard. It's hard because it's like, it's the same place. It's the same people. Could even be some of the same songs. Everything is exactly as it was, except this one thing that is so massive that literally your brain is rewiring how to life, how to make words without your person here. And something about church, I don't know, that actually, so 6 years later, that actually is still the hardest thing for me. And it's not a huge mystery, but I think that that's valuable and important for other ministry widows and for others who love ministry widows to understand that is hard. It's hard and it's different. And unless you've experienced it, you really don't understand it. And if someone is listening to this right now and she is a new ministry widow, it could be the pastor. It could be a different, you know, one of the other, like it could be a lead pastor. It could be one of the other pastors in the church. It could be someone who leads a home group. It could be someone who serves on the worship team. But a ministry widow who is listening right now, what would you say to her? Like, let's suppose she's like a newer ministry widow. What would you even say to her?
You're going to have a lot of grace for yourself and for everyone else. Because nobody knows what to do, least of all you. You don't know what you want, what you need, what's helpful, what's not helpful. And then when you do, it feels burdensome to say it out loud because you're the one who's supposed to be doing the ministering, not being ministered to. And that shift is really hard. And so people try to do what they think is right, and it may be right, but it also may not. It may be really far off from what is right. And so,
oh my gosh.
if you just have grace for yourself and for them, it will be a lot easier to figure out, I think, what is helpful versus what isn't.
That is a good word. That is a good word. You and I have had conversations about how we could probably write a book on the things to maybe not say to your new widow friend. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, things that maybe felt like maybe they felt comforting to us in other losses in our lives. And we don't know what to say to somebody when they've lost somebody. So we go back to, well, that kind of was comforting. So I'm going to share that. And it's like, oh, that, you know, there's really nothing that you can say. There's nothing. No. I wish you and I could share. Here are the magic, you know, 10 word sentences that you could say to your person, your friend who has lost her mate, whether it's in ministry, whether it's not a ministry widow situation. But there are so many things that it can just hit a tripwire inside us. And I love that, to give grace to other people and to extend that same sweet grace to yourself, that, man, your whole world just changed and you'll still be unpacking that for a while.
Yeah,
and
a long
it's, time. It's natural for our emotions to be really raw. It'd be so raw. It would be easy to become offended easily because somebody says something and you just think, my gosh, what were they thinking? Well, they can't think either. They're just as shocked and as hurt as you are. And when we've learned to extend grace and forgive quickly ourselves and others, it makes it just a little more, I wouldn't say easy, but it makes it possible to navigate that.
I wish that we could give magic words, but the closest thing that I can think of to that is, I love you and I'm praying for you. Those are never wrong. And those texts, those phone calls, those like just messages or drop-ins or even just, you know, just, hey, I saw your favorite candy bar today and I thought about you and I'm dropping that on your porch. Don't even come to the door, you know, like those kind of sweet, short things are huge in this world. They're huge.
Big time. Big time. Because in those moments, you feel seen and known and loved. Those are things we miss when we don't have our person anymore. Does anyone even see me? No one sees you like he did. but other people do see you and God will activate them to reach out to you. I agree. I love you and I'm praying for you is so powerful. You almost can't go wrong with that one. Mm-hmm. Another one though, if I may share, this just came to mind when you were sharing. A friend that I had only met, Tim and I had only met this other couple who also was involved in ministry. We'd only met him a couple times over the years, but within a couple days of Tim passing, they messaged me and they said, you know, they love me. They were praying for me. And then they said this, and I'm telling you, almost 6 years later, this still comforts me. And it was, Diana, the veil between heaven and earth is very thin. Mm-hmm. It's very thin. And it spoke to me deeply and it still does. Like my faith and belief in that God is near because that veil is thin. Mm-hmm. And there's just a comfort. There's just a comfort like, okay, you know, there's our loved ones are not as far away as it feels when we go to bed at night and the bed is big and it is empty. They are not as far away. I'm not talking about ghosts. I'm not talking about weird, creepy stuff, but we even read, you know, that there is a cloud of witnesses. I do believe that people who have passed on for special occasions, which are special in the kingdom, special heaven occasions, get to look down and see special occasions. I think of Bailey's wedding. About a year after Tim passed away, Bailey got married, and it was something to navigate such an extremely happy day without that one person there that we all were missing. But what was interesting was after the service, we were outside, and the service was outside. We were all being shuffled around, having photos taken. It had not rained that day. It was not supposed to rain that day. And suddenly there were some clouds that came up in the sky. And you know, like in like children's nurseries in like 1998, where there's like a cloud up here and there's a cloud down here. And then there's like a little sliver of a rainbow between those two clouds. That literally happened. That literally happened. There were about 8 raindrops that dropped down from the sky. And then there was a cloud, and a little sliver of rainbow between them. And in that moment, I felt like that's just God reminding us that, Tim probably got to see his beautiful daughter on that special, special day, even though we just really wish he could have been there. And that's just God's way. That's his way of loving on us. And he doesn't have to take away from one person to be able to extend love and grace to another person. God's economy is abundant. It goes both ways. It goes all the way around. And so I love how he can minister through experiences, through other well-meaning people, even whenever we're going through those situations. Mm-hmm. So Melissa, it is basically, losing your person, it sounds impossible. It feels impossible. And you said at the top of the call, you know, we're okay. We're doing okay. You and I have talked about this. This is not a leading question. This is totally like wherever you are on this. But what would you say to the widow? What would you say to the person who's lost their person when they just feel like they can't? Like maybe they wake up that way and they go, you know what? I just can't today. Or maybe it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon and everything has been going along that day just fine. And then they see something, they feel something, they remember something, and they suddenly can't. What would you say to them?
Well, I did not understand that concept before Chris died because if you know anything about the Enneagram, I'm an 8. I will do all the things. And if you won't help me, I will do them myself and they will be done the way I want them done. And so I'm classified as a doer. I will do the things. And after Chris died, I couldn't do the things. And I didn't know what to do with myself. I got out of bed because I had a daughter who pretty much forced me to. She is probably one of the most emotionally, how do you say it? Like she reads the room. She is emotionally in touch. She knows what's going on in the room. She feels the vibe. And she would tell me, "Mom, you need to get up. Come on, let's go and do something." And she's an extrovert's extrovert, whereas I am complete opposite of that. I could live in my cave forever and never leave and be totally fine. She's the opposite. And so I got out of bed every day for my kids. But then there would be days that I would be like, this is a nope. This is a no. I've reached my limit. I have fulfilled all the capacity for what I have today. And I'm saying that's enough. And some days that was putting on deodorant and brushing my teeth and changing into a different set of pajamas than the ones I started out in. Some days that looks like we get some stuff done, and other days we hit the wall and we're done before we thought we were. And that capacity has slowly started to come back for me. It's not all the way back. I don't think I will ever be the me I was before Chris died. I think she's gone. But I'm more me than I was a year ago. And I think that it's a slow process. Like just the last, in the last 6 months or so, have I been able to regularly cook dinner again. Before Chris died, I cooked 5 nights a week. I cooked from scratch. We ate pretty healthy, like, you know, but Chris loved it. And part of that was he loved it. And, you know, when your kids are like, I don't want to eat this, then, you know, dad was there saying, yes, this is good. Let's eat this. This is so good. And then that's not here anymore. And so, you know, things change and shift, and you just like, we've eaten to survive. And now that's changing a little bit. And now I have a kid who's bulking for football and trying to put on muscle, and another who's playing basketball and trying to like keep that energy up. And so, you know, we have to go back to eating healthier and, you know, watching our protein and all of those kinds of things. And so like, I didn't have the capacity to even think about those things a year and a half ago. I couldn't have done it. I would have just said, well, sorry, just tell me what to order at the grocery store or put it in the cart. I'll have it delivered. And now I'm still not always very good at it, but I can at least like decide 2 nights a week that I'm going to cook. I don't want to say it's a temporary thing, because I don't know that it ever fully goes back to the way things were before. But I think those things get better. And even though they feel terrible in the moment, that it's important to realize that it doesn't always have to be this way.
I love that right there. It doesn't have to be this way. It doesn't always have to be this way. It won't always be this way. That loss of capacity is normal. It's normal. As an Enneagram 8, it also feels like the worst thing ever. Yes. As an Enneagram 3, it also feels like, what are you saying? Oh, what is happening that I don't feel that drive and that push and that all that anymore? Like, where did that go? When we lose our person, we don't just lose our person. We lose the life that we we don't lose the life that we've experienced together, but we lose the life that we thought we were going to experience together coming.
Yes.
We lose different versions of ourselves that mm-hmm. only they could call out in us. Yes. I miss that. Mm-hmm. I miss that. I know you miss that. That one, that Melissa that only Chris could see and that only he could call out. And it's like, snap, the world still needs her. And you know what? She is still in there. She is still in there, and God will pull out. And I know he does. He pulls out. He calls out. He doesn't pull. I believe he calls out those facets of that woman from time to time, where we'll catch a glimpse of, oh, here she, I just saw her. I just saw a glimpse of her. But it can feel, it feels very discombobulating in general. Yes. When we lose, when we have a loss like that, your loss was very sudden, very unexpected. And there are different losses. In our situation, Tim had been, was diagnosed with a cancer, and the doctors were speaking things over him, you know, from the get-go, and we simply were not in agreement with it. But in the moment when he actually left his body, I was very surprised. People say, I've heard people, well-meaning, wonderful people say, you know, well, at least you weren't surprised. Well, at least you knew it was coming. And it's like, oh, there was absolutely not one tiny fiber in my body that believed that was actually happening. Right. And so it's a shock no matter, except, you know, whereas we saw a wonderful, strong, vibrant man slowly lose physical capacities over an 8-month period. You saw, you and I recently had this conversation. You saw a man who had just not too long before cleaned up his diet, lost some weight, become more active. Can we talk about this for just a minute? And then we're going to probably wrap this episode, but I knew before we started, we're probably, maybe if you would, maybe we can have another conversation because sure. I do feel like what this is doing is creating a space for other women and maybe men who have lost their person and they're trying to navigate it. And we can feel like we should be able to figure this out. We should be able to. Why can't we? And we can't because we can't. And that's like really stressful because you can't, because you always could do the things before and suddenly you literally cannot. And right. So I was headed to ask you a question and I just distracted my own self.
Diet and exercise and
thank
things.
Thank you, Melissa. All the I'm things. Like, Melissa, you got me. Yeah, girl. Thank you. Yeah. So like literally Chris had just gone through this like metamorphosis like thing. Mm-hmm. Can you speak to that?
He was probably the healthiest he'd been since he had come out of the Marine Corps over 20 years before. He'd been working with a doctor and a health coach. He had gotten, you know, all the blood work and the heart scans and all of the things, and everything had come back like perfect. I mean, that was the doctor's words, was this doesn't get any better. Like you're doing great, man. Like this is fantastic. He was getting ready to train to run again. Like, and it's disgusting that he, as a holdover from his Marine Corps days, he could just go run 3 miles, just decide he was going to do it and just do it. And I find that utterly disgusting because I don't run. If I run, you should run too. Like that's the way
things
are.
Something's chasing
here.
You.
Yes, there's a problem. And so like he could just go and do that and it was fine. And, you know, like he was healthy. He was in his best spot ever at work. Like we were loving life as a family. Like nobody, like we were good. Like nobody was mad at each other. We didn't have major angst going on. Like we were just in a great place. And then he was gone. And that's just, I mean, probably the nicest word I can think of that is rude. That was just rude.
That is very rude. Yeah. That is very, very rude. Especially it's rude that there is not an explanation and that right. you don't have an explanation. You had mentioned that even you may hear a dog barking in the background. I am doing a medical foster. And she's doing pretty good, but I've literally only heard her bark one time, but she's acting like she's getting ready to gear up. She's been here a little over a month and I think she is finding her voice. So anyway, it's very rude that Chris was genuinely at the top of his game and then he was out of the game. Mm-hmm. Very rude that when he was even in the hospital, unresponsive, that even then?
Mm-hmm. Even then, they kept telling me his blood work is perfect. We're just waiting for him to wake up. Like they would tell me, oh, his organs are fantastic. You know, like you hear all of these things. And like, my concern was like, are his organs okay? Like what's going on? And they're like, they're fantastic. His functions are all wonderful, except for the thing that's not working, except for, you know, we don't know why this happened. We don't know how long he was without oxygen. We don't know why all of these things. And then, you know, the rest of his body was great. And I'm like, okay, this is so weird and so odd. And just like, I don't know, like this happens in the movies. This doesn't happen in real life. How does this happen to people? It did.
It's just so rude.
It's rude. And it's rude every day. It's rude every day. It's rude when I have to clean up after his dog that he wanted, that we love and wouldn't be without him, honestly. But, you know, it's still rude when I, you know, am picking dog hair off of me. And I'm like, Chris Swain, your dog. You know, it's rude in the middle of the night when my kids are both sick and there's only one of me. It's rude when I need to move furniture and he's not here to help me. It's rude when there are decisions that need to be made and I'm the only one who can make them. It's rude when my kids need to be parented and I have to do all of the parenting because he's not here to do it and no one else can. It's just rude in so many ways all the time.
Thank you for giving words to every single bit of that. And I know that I know everyone who is listening to this, who has experienced the rudeness, feels that. You just gave words. There's so much that you suddenly become not 50%, not 65%, not 80% responsible for. You are now the 100% responsible for. Absolutely everything. It's rude that we don't have anyone to blame when the trash didn't get taken out again.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it's all on you. I mean, it's all on me. Yeah.
And it is rude. I love that. I think do you feel like you might have another book in you called How Rude? Or another book about this?
Yeah, I don't know. We'll have to see what the Lord does.
My goodness. Well, I'm going to go ahead and put a bow on this today on our conversation. But oh my gosh, as always, thank you for sharing your heart, for being willing, and God has made you able to share in a way that you're able to articulate and put words to those deep feelings that those who have navigated this journey, we feel it. We may not have the words in the moment. And you have a gifting and a capacity to do that. And I'm so grateful. So thank you for being with me. Thank you for being my first guest. And I just want to wrap with this.
Thank you for having me.
This is just delightful. Those of you who are listening, remember, if you're thinking, oh my gosh, I need some more Melissa Swain in my life, Write It on Their Hearts. Write It on Their Hearts is a fabulous book you can find on Amazon. And let's see, there's a website called?
Yes, writeitontheirhearts.com.
How creative. I love it. And memorable. So connect with Melissa there. You can also connect with her on Instagram at
With the Swains.
Love it. With the Swains. So connect with Melissa. I would love to hear, those who are listening, I would love to hear from you. You can message me. My handle is below at Diana Wallace ND. I would love to hear from you what was valuable from this conversation, and what would you like to hear more of? Because this podcast exists for you, the listener. And Melissa and I have talked about this. We've talked about this so much. There's so much we did not even get into today. But if there is something on your mind or on your heart that you would like to hear more about, we want to bring content that is relevant and valuable to you. So feel free to message either of us, and I would be so honored, Melissa, to have you come back again before too long, and to continue this conversation. So thank you, Melissa. Thank you, listener. And I hope for the rest of this week that you will sprinkle some peace, some health, and even joy around you like confetti.
This has been Peace, Health, and Joy with Diana Wallace. Thanks for spending some time with me today. If this episode was encouraging to you, will you please do a couple things? One, leave me a review so other people can find this podcast. And two, subscribe so you never miss an episode. Until we meet again, I'm praying your week ahead is stuffed full with peace, health, and joy.